It's time now for the Prescott Palette with your host, Barry Barb. Sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Finding and Making the Good is a group of community members recognizing and celebrating people doing good for others in our community. Share your stories of people doing good deeds through their website, findingandmakingthegood.com, and they'll randomly select up to three each month to be recognized. Visit findingandmakingthegood.com to nominate and contribute today, and like them on Facebook to learn more about your neighbors who are making the good in Prescott. Proud to be part of the Gatto Community Gives program. Like them on Facebook and visit their website, findingandmakingthegood.com. Sponsored by Elgato Azul.
All you need to move ahead is a college that works with you. Yavapai College has degree and certificate programs that can fast-track you for the job you want with schedule options that work with your busy life. The step you take now can secure your future. Take it. Sometimes a classroom or a learning lab is the best way out of the box. YC has classes and certificates in the most sought-after trades. Visit Yavapai College online at yc.edu/admission to register today.
Here's a shout out to my good friend Rukini and her crew of Allen's Flowers and More, where they've been creating beauty and delivering happiness since 1914. Located at 1095 East Gurley Street in Prescott, Allen's is your one-stop shop for all your floral and gift needs for any occasion. Weddings, anniversaries, birthdays, or to send a pick-you-up bouquet. Allen's features a wide selection of unique gifts, cards, truffles, as well as convenience of a drive-through pickup window and flower happy hour. Allen's Flowers and More, 1095 East Gurley, 445-5131, or on the web at allensflowers.com. Welcome to the Prescott Palette. I'm Barry, and today we're going behind the scenes of Prescott's culinary, visual, and performing arts, and everything in between. My guest today, how long have I known you now? It's been a while.
Since we got here, 20 years ago.
20 years?
Yes.
Okay. My guest is Gary Cassidy, retired Army Colonel Gary Cassidy.
Special Forces.
Special Forces Gary Cassidy. Author Gary Cassidy. Artist Gary Cassidy. You have a lot going on. You have led one of those lives that like is a movie in a lot of ways. Do you feel that way sometimes or no?
My wife works in the daytime and I'm unsupervised mostly, so I just make things.
Well, so I have to say, so you are definitely the first retired Army Special Forces Colonel to ever have been on the show. So my question is, how does this happen? How do you get into the military and go through 30 years?
Were you there? 30 years, yes.
So how did you start? How did you get involved in art? How did this happen?
I've always done art. My mother did art. I painted when I was 6, 7, 8 years old. I just always identified as an artist.
Okay.
The artist Robert Irwin says he is an artist because he identifies as an artist. And I've always been an artist. I went to college and studied art. I got drafted because I flunked out early.
Okay. Oh, really?
That's how I got in the Army. And I liked it. It fit. And 29 years after I was in the Army finally recognized my talent and appointed me as the Army's artist.
Okay. Wait. I got to go back.
Okay.
So when you entered the Army, you were drafted.
I was a private.
Okay, you were a private. And where was your first place? Where did you go first?
Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri.
Okay. And you
some refer to that as Fort Lost in the Woods.
Fort Lost in the Woods?
Yes.
And so you're done with basic training, and where do you go after that? Where are you stationed?
I went to Fort Ord, California for advanced infantry training.
Okay.
And then I went to Fort Benning, Georgia for officers' candidate school because I had just barely enough college to go to officer's candidate school.
What is officer's candidate school?
Be an officer. The Army in the Vietnam War needed an awful lot of lieutenants.
Right.
And so the program was, the requirements were dropped to 2 years of college. I passed a couple of tests. I got in. I liked it.
So you're in Vietnam, correct?
Yes.
And are you a platoon leader? Is that correct if I remember?
I was a platoon leader in the 4th Infantry Division in Vietnam, straight leg infantry.
Okay. And yes. So how long were you in that?
I was in position? Vietnam for a tour of duty and got injured and sent back. And
because I remember from a couple of conversations we had, one you were on my radio show once a long time ago,
and I did
an article on you a while ago. What was your experience like when you're as a leader coming out from, you know, college, drafted, going through the basic, what was it like for you there? What was it like for you? What did you like about it? What were your strengths? What did you see that you were able to do?
Some of my contemporary officer friends refer to their entire Army experience as a lot of dullness and boredom, punctuated by moments of extreme exhilaration and excitement and danger.
Okay.
Vietnam was like that. It was a lot of hiking through the jungle, punctuated by moments of extreme excitement, adrenaline rushes,
and
danger.
Yeah. So how long did you serve? How long were you in Vietnam, though?
I was only in for 7 months, but it counted as a whole tour.
Only 7 months. I'm thinking 7 months in Vietnam at that age.
In the jungle.
Doing what you're doing.
In the jungle.
Is not just 7 months. It's like probably felt like a lifetime.
My claim to fame is I kept all my guys alive.
Congratulations.
Or nobody died on my watch.
There you go. Congratulations. Yeah. So you were injured and you got... So what was your injury? It was your hand, was it not?
Yeah.
Your hand.
I tried to stop a bullet.
Oh.
I couldn't.
You didn't win. So you go back home. You're sent back home. And so what do you do after that? Where in your career, where does this go?
I went back to Fort Ord, California.
Yeah.
As a captain. I had some great jobs for a guy.
Oh, really?
For a guy.
Oh, what were some of the great jobs as a captain in the Army?
I was the machine gun committee chief, which meant that I got to train machine gun marksmanship and safety.
That actually sounds kind of cool.
Yeah, that's exciting.
That
and we,
really
and
fun.
Because it was Vietnam was winding down, we had more bullets than we could use.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And I taught landmine warfare and demolitions.
Okay, oh, wait. Again, as a novice civilian, how do you teach landmine, what was that again?
Warfare.
What does that involve?
Basically, it's how to detect them and not step on them.
Really?
Yeah. Exactly.
What do you do? Oh, yeah. No. I think there's a little more science involved than the touch and go. Yeah.
And then I ran post information office for Major General Hal Moore of We Were Soldiers Once and Young.
All right, we were talking about this before we came on air. Yeah. So in this information role, did you say you ran the radio station?
Morning radio. We had a morning radio show. And
Is this kind of like Good Morning Vietnam with Robin Williams type thing or no?
It was a little more subdued than that. But the neat thing was the draft was going. I got some really good college graduates, kids that wanted to be in the profession that they were in the post information office for.
Right.
And so I had two good radio guys. One went on to work for CNN for years. We had a newspaper staff that they wanted to be in the newspaper or writing business in some way.
And what was one of the awards you said you won?
We won the coveted and much sought-after Blue Pen Award for the Army's Best Newspaper of the Year.
The Blue Pen Award for the Best Army Newspaper of the Year.
Yeah. And it's like a Pulitzer Prize.
It's like a Pulitzer Prize.
Yeah.
So, what? I literally, there's so much to talk to you about. I'm just like, I don't know where to go. So, okay. So during that period, is this when you met Allie, your wife Allie?
No. I met her late in my career. I'd made major and I was working in Washington, D.C. at the
time. Okay, so you're going through, you're now a major.
Yeah.
And you're in D.C. and you meet your wife, your lovely wife Allie, who I really adore.
Yeah.
And you're a very fortunate gentleman, by the way.
Don't tell anybody.
I won't tell anybody. Okay, so you meet Allie, and then what at this point in career, where are you?
I was I did the Army kind of backwards. I didn't go to airborne school until I was 38 years old, and I didn't attend Special Forces training until I was 40.
Which really?
Some say that's kind of unusual. But I was conned, and
conned
and selected, and since I was already in the Pentagon, they took me down to Fort Bragg and put me through the course and then put me right back in the Pentagon again.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. All right, so... How long is your career? Your career goes 30 years.
30 years, yes.
Okay. So at what point in time, because I love this part of your career, because I don't think anybody knows this, and I didn't know about it until you told me about it, that the Army actually selects one individual a year to be designated as the Army's artist.
That's correct.
Okay. So explain exactly what the Army artist is, how they're selected, and what they do during that. Is it 1 year only, or...
Generally speaking,
okay.
Yeah. selected. The Army decided, and as did the other services, that when the camera came onto the field and Civil War, the camera could take images, but the camera couldn't see things as someone with an artistic talent might see something.
Right.
And so each of the services have had an artist take a look at the whole thing that's going on in that particular branch of the military. And they don't give them any guidance. They say, just paint what you see or give us an impression of what you have. A lot of the World War II art is something that I would call art therapy, because the artist saw something so horrific, art was the only way that they could get that out.
So why do you think, because it's really interesting that a quasi-industry based on warfare and peace, whatever, would select somebody to be an artist to capture that in a personal, what do you think is the thinking behind that? I mean, why would they do that?
It's an intellectual thing.
Okay.
Like I said, the camera sees exactly what the camera sees. Of course, you can alter it with a lot of programs nowadays.
Right.
But an artist, they felt, could see something else. They might see something of the troops. One of the World War II Army artists was on a beach landing with the soldiers when they went, and he saw people being blown up, and that's what he painted. And they're powerful paintings.
So it adds almost like human aspect to it that you can't capture on film. It adds your interpretation or your vision of what happened, and you're communicating that to the viewer. Is that kind of what you're thinking?
Norman Rockwell was commissioned as an Army artist.
Really?
Yes, as a civilian contractor, but he did some World War II posters that are just fantastic. I've seen the Army art collection.
Well, I want to talk. I love this. So before we go forward, tell me about this. Because it's got to be, I'm assuming, a mass collection. And where's it stored? Because I love this story.
It's the Center of Military History.
Of Military History.
Yes.
Okay.
Either a one or a two-star general commands that. And they collect all the historical aspects of the United States Army and store them. They also have an Army art collection, which at one time, and I don't know the date, but they turned everything over from World War II back to the Revolutionary War, all the artworks, they turned that over to the Smithsonian for them to manage and care for and curate. Everything from World War II on, the Army maintains that collection. Where is it, you ask?
I ask.
You see the last bit of Indiana Jones and Raiders of the Lost Ark?
Yeah.
When that little government worker was pushing the Ark way down in the big archives of this warehouse, that's kind of where it is. But it's underground, and it's protected, and it's climactically controlled.
And you've been there, correct?
I've been there several times, yeah.
Yeah.
And the Army just got their very own museum on Fort Belvoir, Virginia, a couple of years back.
Okay.
And so what they're doing now is they're rotating shows of their artwork in and out of the museum.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So when you were the Army's artist, where did you go, and what did you contribute to the collection, so to speak?
I went to Bosnia with my sketchbook and camera and followed the troops around, and it was one of my most favorite assignments.
Really?
Hey, sir, paint me. Take my picture. Want to ride in a helicopter?
Oh, yeah.
I got all this, you know, it was wonderful.
Yeah.
And so I just went over there for a month or so and hung out with the troops.
And so when you were done, when you came back, what did you produce from it? Because I think you said you also did a sculpture, did you not? Or?
I snuck up fine art in on the Army art collection.
Oh, how did this happen?
How do you paint a minefield? They're all buried in that. Mostly it's denied territory. So I did this minefield oil painting, but in the center of the painting, I got real Army barbed wire, and it comes out of the painting, and a real engineer stake. And so the engineer stake breaks the frame of the painting. So you've got, and a real mine sign that's a triangular painted red, says mine on it. And everybody knows not to go in that area. It's denied territory. So basically, I painted a big weedy field with this barbed wire fence around it with a mine sign on it. And that's in the collection now.
So and you were the artist for, well, you did 2 years, you did 1 year as an artist? As the
well, 1 year.
1 year?
Total, yeah.
Okay. And so then you're out of the Army. So you retire as an Army colonel.
Yes.
Which I think it's not like, I mean, I think it's a far way from private to colonel. Obviously, it took 30 years, you know. But you left, you retired, right?
Yes.
And you've been retired for how long now?
Probably, since 1999.
99, okay.
So.
And so your experience has run the gamut of every aspect of military life, I'm assuming.
Back to the Army art thing, I like to tell people that we have lots and lots and lots of generals. Some say too many.
Too many generals?
Army gets one artist a year, and I'm very proud to have
done that. So post-military, you're now in retirement.
Yes.
You are a sculptor. You are an iron worker. You've done some incredible work in town. But you also decided to write your autobiography.
Well, I got out of the Army. I didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
My wife had a pretty good job. She was just starting her career as a mental health professional. I decided to go back to college and I got a doctorate.
So you went back to school after
yeah.
this?
Okay. On the GI Bill.
Okay.
God bless it.
There you go.
And that opportunity presented itself, and so that's what I did. I thought I wanted to have a job teaching art somewhere. It looked like the perfect job. You show up. You know, I like metal sculpture, so uh-huh. I know how to run all the equipment and that. So I thought that would be a perfect job for me. I got to do it a couple of times at Northern Virginia Community College in Manassas, Virginia, and here at our own Yavapai College.
And?
I did it once, and that was...
That was enough? So now you have your own studio, doing
yes.
your own work. And what I like about you... So you wrote a series. There's three books, correct?
Still working on the third one.
Okay, yeah. So if I remember right, walk me through this. Is The Fisherman?
The first one is The Soldier's Story.
The Soldier's the first one?
Yeah, Soldier's Story.
Why did you start with The Soldier's Story?
I just started writing about my experiences in the Army. It's my lovely wife, Allie, likes to say, this is not a book written by some bloviated old Army colonel telling war stories. It's more like a Joseph Heller, Catch-22.
Yeah.
I went to work every day. I got to see some very humorous things.
And it's not a short tome. I mean, it's like 400 pages, is it not? Or something like
I'm
that?
I'm still working on it. I'm trying to, right now, the first one is The Soldier's Story, Colonel Butch Cassidy Memoirs, Volumes 1.
Where does Butch come from, by the way?
I was in Vietnam, and we got a drop of books out in the middle of the jungle, and one of them was the narration of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Really?
Yeah. And my platoon said, that's it. We changed our call signs. I was Butch Cassidy. My platoon sergeant was the Sundance Kid.
No way.
Yeah, and we had the two squads. It was Kid 1 and Kid 2.
Oh, my gosh. That's great. I love that.
And it just stuck. That just everybody called me Butch. So when I got to the Pentagon, I was the first one to make camouflaged business cards, and I put my name on there.
Your moniker on it?
Gary Butch Cassidy. It got me remembered.
I like that. So the first book is A Soldier, and that's about your experience in the military through Vietnam and after into California and everything else like that.
Right.
And then the second one you wrote is The Artist. Is
the
that correct?
Fisherman's Story.
The Fisherman.
Yeah.
I'm sorry about that. I knew that.
Which was the reason that I really started writing this. The Army is, there's this buried sense of humor throughout the Army. And to have a prank played on you by some of your soldiers is like the ultimate compliment. And I took a bunch of soldiers out of Fort Bragg, and we went out of Wrightsville Beach on a half-day fishing trip. We set a record for catching amberjacks that day for this particular boat. He'd never caught so many. We caught one 63-pound amberjack, and we had invited. I was a captain at the time, and me. Okay, I'm Captain Butch Cassidy. I'm running around with Captain Hawkeye Pierce, full-blooded Osage Indian, by the way, and a lifetime friend. So this major we had invited, he said, no, ha-ha, I ain't going fishing with you, but I'll take anything you catch over 50 pounds. So the littlest guy on the boat on our trip caught a 63-pound amberjack. and we lashed it off to the front bumper of my 1967 Olds Delta 88 convertible, which I named Esmeralda, and we drove it back to Fort Bragg, and we put it in his motel room in the summertime, turned the heat on, and left it there until he came back that night. And then that was nothing. You know, okay, that was funny. He got over it. But the Vietnam War quit. Evidently, things were pretty quiet in Fort Bragg, and this story just got told and retold, and the fish kept getting bigger and bigger. And I thought, yeah, I ought to write about that.
Yeah. So what's the next series? What's the next one? The final?
Final one is the artist story.
Okay.
And that's trying to make 12 years in the Pentagon sound interesting.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So why is it called the
I was appointed the Army's artist during this time, and that's a story of how that took place.
Yeah.
And it was a great career, Barry. Let me tell you, I couldn't ask for anything better.
So now you're retired. You're in Prescott. So how did you find Prescott? How did you pick on this?
My lovely wife, Allie, got a job here.
Oh, at the VA, correct, or no?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got turned down by over 100 colleges, universities, and community colleges.
You did or she did?
I did. All,
oh, yeah, I was going to say, I don't see Allie getting turned down from anybody.
Allie put out a couple of resumes in the mental health profession, and here she is in Prescott.
It's probably not bad for a retired Army colonel to have a health professional in the house.
Let's say that I receive very good guidance from time to time, much appreciated guidance.
So you've been very involved in the community since you got here. I mean,
yes.
you were at Yavapai College. You taught there for a little bit, did you not?
I was. I was on their foundation board for 4 years.
Okay. And then what else have you been working on? What have you been doing?
Well, we remodeled three houses since we've been
here. The compound.
The compound.
Yeah, the compound.
We have... I get up in the morning, I have a choice of what to do if I don't have a project. I've got a painting studio, I've got a metalworking shop, and a woodworking shop. And so I can paint, I can make projects, I get a job every once in a while.
Do you have a favorite out of the three mediums you work in, which is probably more than three, do you have a favorite you like to work in, or maybe you like to work in one for a certain reason or a period of time because of something that's going on, or do you just kind of float between the three of them?
If it's cold and rainy, I prefer painting in my warm studio.
You made that too easy. That's such an easy answer.
No, not really. Art's art. I have fun doing it. I'm making a large steel outdoor bench out of a giant iron bed frame right now. And I got started, and now I'm going to have to cut it apart and start all over again.
Now, is your stuff, when you do your metalwork, is it a combination of found objects, or is it kind of all new creations?
It depends on what the job is. I've done work for El Gato Azul.
You have, and it's lovely. We appreciate it. Thank you.
And that all comes from Prescott Steel, and it's fabricated with the owner's guidance. I would like to have this happen, and so... My right. job is to take somebody's vision and turn it into an ornamental ironwork that's pleasing to look at and that will last a long time.
So if you were a someone of your age when you went into the military, how old were you, 19, 20? 21?
I was 21.
21? If they're looking at it as a career path in the military, when you were there, you were obviously drafted in, and someone nowadays looking at it, would you recommend that, or what do you think? Because you obviously had a very unique experience, I feel, to the average Joe, so to speak.
Serendipity played a lot of in my career field.
Yeah,
and I just happened to be. Here's the guidance: show up, work hard, stay in shape.
That's pretty much everything. That's pretty much everything.
Yeah.
Every day, whether it's military or not, that's
right.
Pretty much
that works.
Yeah. So, what do you see going on? What do you work on next? You have anything fun you want to do, or what are you doing? Anything?
I have a client that wants a steel bird-like gate made for them, but I don't make gates. I call them portals.
They're portals.
Yes, and I don't do railings or fences, but I like to call them linear sculptures.
Yes. I know. There's a reason for that.
Yeah, so this lady wants a peacock gate, And so I'm going to incorporate either blue glass or geodes or something.
Now, do you have work in town that people can see besides the work at Elgato's? That's public work, so to speak?
I did two steel ravens for the Raven Cafe.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
And one of them is up on top where you can see from the street, and the other one's down on their roof patio. And when I was delivering them, the manager at the time was named Raven, and I've got my two steel ravens with me. And a raven flies down and lands right next to us. My sister said I should have bought a lottery ticket right then and there.
Right then and there. Well, you sound like, if not one of the luckiest people, one of the most fortunate. I mean, I've been blessed to know you, and you and Allie both. I love talking with you. I love, hearing your stories. And if you get a chance to pick up one of Gary's books, they get them where? On Amazon?
On Amazon.
You self-published, right?
I self-publish those. And when I get the third one finished, we're going to look for a real genuine publisher.
Oh, really?
Put some advertisements out. Perhaps at my age now, I'll advertise an AARP.
So the funny thing is, so knowing you, when I read the books, and this is something when you do acquire one of these tomes, so to speak, I can hear you reading the passages. I hear your voice in my head. And, just knowing how you are as a person and, so unique and individual, but also honest, and it brings a lot to the stories you tell, because you feel like you're part of it. And so I think it's really something unique for you. It's conveying your story to people that they can read it, knowing that this is Gary. This is not something that's made up. This is not, smoke and mirrors. This is something you lived and did. And I think the way you share it is really genuine. And I really think it's awesome.
Thank you, Barry. I keep waiting for the Pulitzer people to call me.
Well, you already won the blue pen of the whatever it was. All right, so my guest today has been Gary Cassidy, retired Army Special Forces Colonel. Is that how I say it?
That's how you say it.
That's how you say it. Yeah. Well, thank you for your service. Thanks for everything you bring to it. I really appreciate you and Allie. And if you want to find his books, look him on Amazon.
On Amazon, yes.
And it's The Soldier Story?
Soldier Story, The Fisherman's Story, and
to be published soon,
The Artist's Story.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Prescott Palette. Be sure to check out Mike Holm every Thursday in the Across the Street section to see who I'm talking with next. And we'll see you next week on the Prescott Palette. Here's a shout out to my good friend Rukini and her crew of Allen's Flowers and More, where they've been creating beauty and delivering happiness since 1914. Located at 1095 East Gurley Street in Prescott, Allen's is your one-stop shop for all your floral and gift needs for any occasion. Weddings, anniversaries, birthdays, or to send a pick-you-up bouquet. Allen's features a wide selection of unique gifts, cards, truffles, as well as convenience of a drive-through pickup window and flower happy hour. Allen's Flowers and More, 1095 East Gurley, 445-5131, or on the web at allensflowers.com.
All you need to move ahead is a college that works with you. Yavapai College has degree and certificate programs that can fast-track you for the job you want, with schedule options that work with your busy life. The step you take now can secure your future. Take it. Sometimes a classroom or a learning lab is the best way out of the box. YC has classes and certificates in the most sought-after trades. Visit Yavapai College online at yc.edu/admission to register today.
For your next special occasion, or to make any occasion special, Torme, Prescott's newest Italian bistro, is a place to meet. Open weekdays for lunch and Monday through Saturday for dinner, Torme offers a selection of creative pasta dishes, fresh seafood, sandwiches, and salads, with all sauces and pasta made fresh daily. Torme, not your mom's Italian, but you'll love it even more. Torme, for any occasion, 802 Valley Street in beautiful Prescott, 778-7123.
Let Rafter 11 cater your next special event with a selection of our prepared scones, sandwiches, salads, and bruschetta boards. Rafter 11 Wine Cafe is your one-stop shop for any event. Conveniently located at Center Court in the Prescott Valley Entertainment District. Plan an event on our spacious outdoor patio, in our relaxing dining room, or order ahead for pickup. Rafter 11 Wine Cafe, Coffee Shop, and now your party place, 928-227-2050.
You've been listening to the Prescott Palette on KQ&A at 11:30 a.m. every Saturday at 12 noon. If you know someone who's doing great things, have a special event, or just got a great story, drop me a line at presspalette@gmail.com. That's P-R-E-S, palette@gmail.com, and we'll get them on the air. In the meantime, see who I'm talking to every Thursday in the Across the Street section of the Daily Courier and on Facebook at Prescott Palette.